First time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. lawmakers received an extraordinary classified briefing by the Trump administration Wednesday on the situation in North Korea. The lawmakers were able to pose questions to the president's national security team and learn about the broad range of options to remove this threat from North Korea. Republican Senator John McCain believes using military force against North Korea will involve a lot of consideration.
We know that there's artillery at the DMZ, which can reach Seoul, a city of 25 million people. We can take out that artillery, but probably not before they had fired some shots. So this is a very delicate situation. And so far, I think that the president and his national security team have handled it pretty well.
Trump and U.S. officials have repeatedly said all options remain on the table to deal with the further nuclear or make that further North Korean provocations. Meanwhile, a U.S. Navy strike force led by the aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson is approaching the east coast of the Korean Peninsula as an additional show of force to North Korea. U.S. military officials are slamming Turkish airstrikes against Kurdish targets in northern Syria, and Turkey's actions on Tuesday jeopardized both the fight against the Islamic State terror group and the well-being of U.S. forces on the ground. A U.S. military official on Wednesday said they got only about an hour's notice about the strikes. A spokesman for Turkey's foreign ministry defended the airstrikes, which resumed on Wednesday, saying the U.S., the coalition, and Russia were all duly informed through both military and diplomatic channels. For details on more news, join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Turkish authorities say they have arrested more than 1,000 people and suspended 9,100 policemen in a crackdown on alleged supporters of cleric Fethullah Gulen. The government blames the exiled cleric for orchestrating last year's failed military coup against President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. President Trump unveiled his tax overhaul plan Wednesday. The aim's to slash corporate taxes by more than 50%, but the plan had no specifics on how it will impact the average citizen. Trump proposed cutting the U.S. corporate tax rate, the highest among the world's industrialized nations, from 35% to 15%. Steve Mnuchin is the U.S. Treasury Secretary.
We have a very uncompetitive system that's hindering the economy and jobs. We want to make business competitive, and we want to simplify the personal tax system, lower taxes, and create economic growth. So this is going to be the biggest tax cut and the largest tax reform in the history of our country. And we are committed to seeing this through.
The Trump administration, however, offered no immediate plan to pay for the tax cuts, which some independent economic analysts say that over the next decade could add $2 trillion to nearly $20 trillion in long-term debt the U.S. has already amassed. A low-cost, widely available drug could save the lives of 1 in 3 mothers who would otherwise bleed to death after childbirth, according to a new study. Henry Ridgewell reports from London on what's learned so far.
Severe bleeding, known as postpartum hemorrhage or PPH, is the leading cause of maternal death worldwide, killing more than 100,000 women every year. The world's poorest countries, especially in Africa and India, are the worst hit. But there is new hope. In the 1960s, Japanese researchers developed a drug called tranexamic acid, which works by stopping blood clots from breaking down. But they could not persuade doctors to trial the drug for treating postpartum hemorrhage. The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine has done just that in a trial involving 20,000 women in 21 countries, mainly in Africa and Asia. The results show tranexamic acid reduces the risk of bleeding to death by almost a third, with no side effects for either mothers or babies. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A Somali pirate will be spending the rest of his life in a U.S. federal prison for attacking an American Navy ship in 2010. The Ashton was not damaged and no one on board was hurt. For details on more news, please join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian health authorities are denying an epidemic has broken out in the country's southeastern Sino County.
Based on our past history of Ebola, the first thing we had to do was to rule out Ebola. So we got the first specimen and tested them, and all came back negative for Ebola.
Dr. Francis Carter is the chief medical officer of Liberia. Sierra Leone puts its medical personnel on alert due to the unexplained deaths in neighboring Liberia. Nigeria's information minister will explain why President Buhari missed two cabinet meetings this week. And a magistrate court refuses to drop treason charges against Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema.
We also can see that the state is struggling to formulate the treason charge. So I'm not calling for the president to intervene in any kind of thing. I'm just calling for charges to be dropped because there are no basis to sustain the charges.
Deprose Muchena is Amnesty International's regional director for Southern Africa. A low-cost drug could prevent deaths caused by childbirth bleeding. And an experimental malaria drug kills mice. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Health authorities in Liberia are denying an epidemic has broken out in the country's southeastern Sino County after 10 people died there mysteriously over the weekend and about 8 others being seriously ill. The victims were among many who attended a 2-night wakekeeping followed by a funeral. With the ghost of Ebola still on the minds of most Liberians, Dr. Francis Carter, chief medical officer of Liberia, says health authorities have ruled out Ebola as the cause of the deaths after conducting preliminary tests of the specimens. He says experts are now focused on other possible causes, including food poisoning or any other infectious diseases.
What the facts are now is that over the weekend, there was a funeral that occurred in Greenville, Sino. And as we speak, there have been 18 persons that came down with illness. They started with vomiting, diarrhea, weakness, and then hallucination. Out of the 18, 10 persons have died. There are 8 that are critically ill at the hospital in Greenville. Based on our past history of Ebola, the first thing we had to do was to rule out Ebola. So we got the first specimens and tested them, and all came back negative for Ebola. So we know that we are not having any outbreak of Ebola and so forth. So now we are going through the process systematically to see what are we dealing with, whether it's another infectious disease that we are dealing with or whether it's food poisoning and so forth.
But Dr. Carter, as you said, you are still trying to investigate, but preliminarily, what could have taken place there?
We are trying to, based on the data that we collect, the information we get from the field, that will drive what actions we take. But the first thing was to rule out Ebola. And since it is not Ebola, is there any infectious disease? If it is not, was there a food poison? If it is a food poison, looking at what we call the incubation period, from the time of injection of the food to the time people started having symptoms.
Dr. Carter, how have things changed for the Liberian medical profession, particularly since Ebola? Have facilities improved to deal with, say, an eventual epidemic?
Definitely. I think one of the lessons learned from Ebola is the fact that we have had a lot of capacity being built within country with the effort of most of our partners, most especially CDC. So the local capacity is being built. And so we are not afraid. You know, we have the capacity and we have the ability to contain whatever comes and so forth. So we have built the capacity of people at a local level. We've also built isolation units in some of the hospitals around the country. Personally, we have 20 functional isolation units. So those people that we have suspected in Greenville, they have been placed in the isolation unit. And that also helps to contain a spread of whatever it may be from the general public, especially those within the hospital environment. But I think we have the capacity, we have the trained manpower, and our lab facilities have been built to a certain level. And the thing is that we've also built partnership so that those things that we cannot do in country, we can expeditiously do them in the neighboring country or send them to the United States or send them to France.
As you said, Dr. Carter, that you have collected samples, how soon before the Liberian people or the people of Sino know what actually transpired?
Basically, this is a fluid situation, but we are working expeditiously to make sure that we get the results that we need, because we know that the longer this continues, people in the area will continue to be panicking and so forth.
Dr. Francis Carter is the Chief Medical Officer of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Health authorities in Sierra Leone have been put on alert after the mysterious deaths of 10 people over the weekend in neighboring Liberia's southeastern Sino County. Dr. Brahima Kabo, Sierra Leone's Chief Medical Officer, says Sierra Leone District Medical Officers on the border with Liberia have had meetings with their Liberian counterparts.
As Sierra Leoneans, the district medical officers and the border areas already had meetings today with their counterparts for them to be on the alert in case it is an infectious disease. But thankfully, it's not an infectious disease that transmits from person to person. Today, as I speak, my colleagues are meeting with their counterparts in the border areas.
We also heard that about a month ago there was an outbreak of monkeypox. What do you know about monkeypox?
Well, monkeypox is one of these viral diseases that is similar to the smallpox that was eradicated in 1980. It has similar features, but it is very mild and is transmitted from animals to human. Yes, it's a 37-year-old man in the Pujon district who had skin lesions, and when they actually tested, they realized that it was monkey pox. But the man is now recovered, and very soon he'll be discharged from the hospital.
Is there any relation to Ebola?
No, well, these are all viral diseases, but the Ebola is a viral hemorrhagic fever that brings a black bleeding, high fever. While as with the monkey pox, you have fever, swelling of the lymph node, then you have a skin rash that goes to vesicles, and vesicles, they actually ooze out fluid, then form a crust. So more or less, it's actually a skin disease that is makes it starts with the face, it goes down to the limbs and the trunk. It is unlike Ebola. Of course, the same incubation period, 6 to 21 days, but it was much milder and it doesn't have any relation.
So, Doc, do we have any reason to fear, like most people are fearing, that something much like Ebola is coming around? Do we have any reason to fear?
There is no need for panic. There is no need for alarm. It's not Ebola in Liberia. I want to repeat. Probably they may have eaten something, or they may have drank something in the funeral, but it is not an infectious disease that passes from one person to another.
Dr. Brahima Kabo is Sierra Leone's Chief Medical Officer. He spoke with VOA stringer Kelvin Lewis in Freetown. Nigeria's Information Minister says President Muhammadu Buhari worked from home after delegating Vice President Yemi Osinbajo to lead the Federal Executive Council meeting in the capital, Abuja, on Wednesday. Lyle Mohammed also denied local media reports that the president will from now on be working from home. He says the president needed rest. His remarks came after President Buhari missed two cabinet meetings this week. There have been calls recently for President Buhari to step aside and hand over power to the vice president. Critics say Mr. Buhari's health condition makes it impossible for him to discharge his constitutionally mandated duties. Information Minister Lyle Mohammed tells viewers Peter Clotty that President Buhari is feeling much better, contrary to what the critics say.
I informed them that the president will work at home today, and that was why he was not at the Federal Council meeting, and that he had directed the VP to preside, and that the VP will go and see him later in the evening.
So beginning Thursday, the president should be working as regularly from his office at Asoro as normal.
I can only speak of today. I can't speak of tomorrow.
So how is the president's health at the moment, Mr. Information Minister?
He's getting better. He was busy all throughout yesterday. He was busy throughout Monday.
Any plans when he's supposed to report back to his doctors?
I'm not aware of that. I have no information in that respect.
So what currently is the state of fighting against graft, because recently we've had a surge of the EFCC being able to retrieve some monies. What can you tell me about the state of affairs in fighting corruption?
So I think the whistleblower policy which the government introduced is working very well, and daily we're inundated by whistleblowers who claim to have information as to where looted funds or illegally acquired assets are located. We follow due process, and we protect the identity of the whistleblowers, and we pursue every lead. But I can say very confidently that the war against corruption is any more traction by the day.
Any special remuneration or gift or thumbs up for the whistleblowers?
So I remember clearly, any money about or below 1 billion naira, the whistleblower will take 5% if he so wishes. Between the next 4 million will attract 4%. And I think anything above 5 billion with a flat fee of 3%.
I have understood some Nigerians wanted a law that should be passed in parliament instead of the backing from the Federal Executive Committee about this whistleblowing policy. Is the government going to support this move?
Well, it's been considered. I mean, we have heard that opinion. And I think at the last meeting of the Presidential Committee on Asset Recovery, it was being considered.
How are people reacting to the monies being found in these places? Some of them have been even buried in their cemeteries and the likes.
Well, you see, I think for once, Nigerians are now living up to the reality of the type of rapacious corruption and stealing that went on in the country before now. And these discoveries, I think more than anything, have convinced them of that the most important agenda of the government in Nigeria today is to fight corruption, eradicate corruption.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 27th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. A Zambian judge has referred the case of jailed opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema to the country's high court. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Zambia's opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema has been behind bars for 2 weeks. He will remain there as a judge in Magistrate Court, said Wednesday. He did not have the power to rule on a defense motion to drop the charge of treason. Zambia does not allow bail for treason cases. The spokesman for Hichilema's UPND party, Charles Kakoma, told VOA Wednesday the defense has filed another application to dispute the treason charge before another magistrate court. Those proceedings were adjourned until Thursday. Amnesty International has criticized the case as political persecution through prosecution and called for Hichilema's immediate release. Depros Muchena is the Amnesty International Regional Director for Southern Africa.
We also can see that the state is struggling to formulate the treason charge, given the continued changes in the structure of the treason charges. So I'm not calling for the president to intervene in any kind of thing. I'm just calling for charges to be dropped because there are no basis to sustain the charges.
In the charge sheet before the court Wednesday, the prosecution said the treason charge stems from an incident on April 8th in which Hichilema's motorcade failed to give way to the presidentist. The prosecution accuses Hichilema's 5 members of his staff of collaborating with 60 others in obstructing President Edgar Lungu's motorcade in a way that could cause harm or death to the president. Hichilema's United Party for National Development has rejected the charge. This is the second time the opposition leader has been arrested since disputed elections in August. Hichilema refused to recognize Lungu as the winner. His detention this month has caused political tension to climb again. Several incidents of public buildings being set alight have been reported. Some have called for Lungu to release Hichilema, but presidential spokesman Amos Chanda told VOA's Daybreak Africa Wednesday that is a matter for the courts.
The position of the president remains the same, that he respects the due process of the law, and that his intervention in any court matter is only possible once the due process of the law is complete.
If convicted on treason charges, Hichilema faces a minimum jail term of 15 years. The maximum sentence is death penalty. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Burundians are marking the second anniversary of protests that erupted in the capital after President Pierre Nkurunziza publicly announced he was seeking another term. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
It was a Sunday morning, April 2015, when protests erupted against the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza's move to veto another term in the office. Opposition leaders said it violated the country's constitution and the Arusha Agreement that limits a president to run for more than two terms in the office. More than 500 people were killed in a violent protest and thousands fled to neighboring countries. Impunity has been one of the major talking points in and outside the country. Laurentine Kanyana is Burundi's justice minister. She told VOA that more than 200 policemen and soldiers were arrested since 2015.
We see that there is improvement of the situation in terms of security, in terms of human rights. Of course, we have some soldiers, some policemen who are in jail because of some mistakes they did during this period.
According to Burundi's justice minister, 2,500 people were released from prison as part of President Pierre Nkurunziza's annual pardon. Though the country is relatively gaining stability compared to the last 2 years, opposition members in the country say that the incumbent president is focused to change the country's constitution. Agathon Rwasa is an opposition leader in the country and the deputy speaker of the parliament.
Unfortunately, this just turning into another more critical situation where Pierre Nkurunziza is intended to manipulate the constitution by claiming that it is the wish of the people, although it isn't. Dictatorship is getting stronger and stronger, and people are being killed for their political beliefs.
The National Commission for the Inter-Burundi Dialogue released a preliminary report indicating that majority of Burundians supported the change of the country's constitution. Jean-Claude Karerwa is President Pierre Nkurunziza's spokesman.
The President of the Republic cannot change the constitution, but the people of Burundi can change the constitution whenever they want it to be changed. And well, this is the case for other countries. And if the people decide that the constitution should change, it will change. And if the people of Burundi decide that the president can run for another term, if he wants to, he can. I don't see any problem with this kind of issue.
As now the focus is turned to the preparation of the 2020 general elections, with the current regional mediated dialogue under the facilitation of the former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa failing to produce tangible results after the recent boycott of the rounds of talks by the Burundi's government. The international community believes only an inclusive dialogue will lead to a sustainable peace and stability in the country. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
About 100,000 women die every year around the world from severe bleeding after childbirth, but a clinical trial says an inexpensive and readily available drug could save many lives. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
About 20,000 women from 21 countries took part in the woman trial. Most of them were African and Asian. Halima Shakur is the trial's project director. She's Associate Professor of Clinical Trials at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The problem we've been looking at is something called postpartum hemorrhage. This is where women bleed severely after giving birth. And it's one of the biggest killer of mothers. You know, mothers go into childbirth expecting everything to happen normally. But in Africa and Asia, about 10% of women will end up with severe bleeding.
She says bleeding after childbirth kills one woman every 6 minutes, and it often happens without warning.
When a woman is pregnant, her womb, her uterus, is stretched by the baby growing. And when she gives birth, the womb doesn't contract down fully. And so you start to get bleeding at the site where the baby was attached to the mother. And that's the most common cause of postpartum hemorrhage.
A woman is more at risk for bleeding if she gives birth to more than one baby, or if she's anemic, or has had a cesarean section in the past. Professor Shakur says the trial focused on the drug tranexamic acid, also known as TXA. It's been around for a long time.
Tranexamic acid was actually invented by some academics, a couple who were working at a university in Japan, and this was over 50 years ago. This was in post-war Japan, where everything was scarce, and they wanted to do research that wouldn't cost a lot of money, so the most freely available thing is blood. And they started looking at what research they can do using blood.
The husband and wife team developed the drug to stop postpartum hemorrhage. It was common in Japan following World War II. However, they were never able to convince doctors to conduct a clinical trial. It took about 50 years for that to happen. The woman trial results are published in The Lancet. Funding came from the Wellcome Trust, Britain's Health Department, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Scientists have developed a compound that both cured and prevented malaria in animals. They say the experimental drug is even effective against resistant strains of the mosquito-borne parasite. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
If the experimental drug is effective in humans, it could be a huge breakthrough in the treatment and prevention of malaria, a disease that strikes an estimated 200 million people each year. The parasitic illness is responsible for about 425,000 deaths annually, most of them children in sub-Saharan Africa. Scientists say the compound, called MMV-048, blocks the parasite across its multiple life stages, interrupting the infection cycle and potentially curing the disease in humans. Kelly Chibale is a professor of organic chemistry at the University of Cape Town in South Africa and director of the Cape Town Drug Discovery and Development Center. He's senior author of a study describing the work in the journal Science Translational Medicine. In animal trials, Chibale says MMV-048 cured 100% of mice that were infected with malaria.
Overall, it presents an exciting profile in terms of the potential to contribute to malaria eradication.
Chibale stresses MMV-048 is not a vaccine, but it completely protected monkeys that received a dose of the compound. Researchers were unable to infect them, according to Chibale, who hopes the experimental drug has the same effect in humans.
It's present in the body, in the blood, already, so that even when you get bitten by a mosquito, the parasites initially that end up in the blood, they will find the drug already waiting for them, and they'll be killed off before they increase in population.
In the animal studies, Chibale says the compound lasted for 8 days in the bloodstream, acting as a shield against infection. MMV-048 targets a protein that the malaria parasite needs to protect itself from the immune system. Chibale says the parasites are destroyed in the liver, the first place they travel after someone is bitten by an infected mosquito. That prevents parasites from migrating into the bloodstream, where they normally would infiltrate red cells by the thousands, maturing into a form that can be transmitted back to mosquitoes. Early clinical trials showed that the compound is safe in humans. The next stage of trials, to begin testing MMV-048's effectiveness in people actually infected with malaria, is slated to begin later this year. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Health authorities in Liberia are denying an epidemic has broken out in the country's southeastern Sino County after 10 people died there mysteriously. And that's it for this Thursday, April 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a good day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Zambia. will President Edgar Lungu declare a state of emergency after public buildings were torched in attacks? He blames the violence on opposition members protesting the arrest of their leader, Hakainde Hichilema. An in-depth discussion on Zambia on the next Straight Talk Africa.